This is Yo Rocco.
Hey, it's Rocky. This is the Yo Rocco podcast. My thanks to Brian Ellison for that terrific newly recorded introduction. Hey, I'm excited for today's episode. This week I talked to Kyle Jones of the Interview an Atheist at Church project. Kyle, spelled K-I-L-E, in case you want to Google his name and the Interview an Atheist at Church project and see some of the work that he's done with that project, which I think you should do. Kyle lived around the area I live in for a while in Claremont, California, as a student at the Claremont School of Theology. He is no longer in that institution, but still lives nearby. And I got connected to Kyle because he reached out to us last summer to the church that I work at and offered this event as something that we might do. Interview an Atheist at Church is a project that he started to get atheists in Christian churches talking with their pastors up in front of everybody. It's an attempt to kind of dispel some of the stereotypes that those groups have about each other and to humanize, in his words, one another. So we thought this is really great. This is a worthwhile project, and we scheduled him for last summer, and we were excited to have him there. And then he had a car accident. He's fine. But we had to cancel it, basically. But now it's back on. It's this coming Sunday. Kyle is going to be our guest in our church, and I'm going to interview him up in front of the congregation, which is something I've never done before. And as you'll hear in our conversation, something that makes me really, really, really nervous. But I'm a lot less nervous now having talked to Kyle. We had a great conversation. He's a really, really thoughtful guy who has really an agenda of creating understanding and cultivating conversations between people of faith and people of no faith, whether they've never had faith or, in his language, deconverted, which is part of his story. But he's not trying to convert or deconvert anybody, and he's not, you know, as you'll hear, he doesn't have a lot of sympathy or any sympathy for a militant kind of atheism that wants to caricature people of faith as stupid or anything like that. So this was a really enjoyable conversation. You can always hear the unedited cut of these interviews on my YouTube channel. Just search for Rocky Suppinger on YouTube. Thanks again to Landon Witsit for that terrific theme music as well. You should look up Landon's stuff. He's on SoundCloud under the name Go to Sleep John Darling. And he has a lot of really cool music up there, so you should check that out. And as always, feel free to email me, rockycpc@gmail.com, with thoughts, questions, and concerns, or content people you think I should talk to. I always look forward to it, and we'll promise to respond. So here is Kyle Jones. All right, good. Well, thank you, first and foremost, for being willing to come on my little podcast and talk to me about Interview an Atheist at Church Day. That is this coming Sunday, correct?
Yes, sir.
And this is your second time doing this?
I've done it twice before with a pastor of a Seventh-day Adventist church in Pasadena, but I primarily coordinate other people to do them, but this will be my third this Sunday.
But this is your project?
Yes, I started it.
Yeah, okay, so this is the third year that you've done it, and how is it different this year from the previous years?
Well, different people involved, and just trying to keep the momentum going, basically. I think this year it's been less, the last 2 years it's been less about it being a particular day. So when I first started this project, it was getting all these pastors and all these atheists together to have an interview on a particular Sunday. I believe it was Cinco de Mayo.
Okay.
A couple years ago, and so they all did it on one Sunday, right? But now it's been coordinating it to happen at any time, any Sunday.
Okay, so it's not tied to one particular day anymore.
No, it's not. It's okay. branched out from that. That was just kind of an initial thrust.
I got that idea because I saw one of the videos that's online is from a church in Minneapolis, Solomon's Porch, where Doug Padgett, who's the pastor, he's interviewing somebody, and he says, "We're recording this because this is happening live all over the country, and today's the day that all these churches are doing it. So, I shouldn't say that to my church on Sunday, that it's a national thing that's coordinated on a particular day anymore."
Yes, it's not. And actually, Doug, I know Doug. I've been on his radio program. I'm actually flying out to Minnesota to see him at the end of May and speak at his church with him.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, was he like one of the first people to get on board and back you with this?
He was.
Cool. Is this, for people who don't know, Doug Padgett has been part of the what used to be called the Emergent Church Conversation. And, you know, in the evangelical circles, that got accused of being covertly, if not outrightly atheist, right? And so his sympathy for this doesn't surprise me. And, I've seen the video of his interview with you on his radio show, and he's very thoughtful, and he seems very sympathetic to the whole project.
Oh, he is. He's been a great supporter. I really like Doug a lot. Him and Phil Wyman, who's a pastor of sort of emergent, progressive, postmodern ministry-focused church in Salem, Massachusetts, is another one. So Doug and Phil have been very supportive of this, and I really appreciate it.
Okay, so that leads me to one thing that I'm just assuming, and check me if I'm wrong about this, but this idea must get more traction in progressive churches, right?
Yes, it does. I haven't actually ever really reached out to very conservative or fundamentalist churches, mainly because I already get that it's not something they'd be into. So I specifically target, it could be mainline, some mainline churches, mainline to liberal or mainline to progressive churches, I know would be willing to have this kind of a dialogue, but I don't particularly look for, you know, Southern Baptist churches or Reformed Presbyterian churches or...
And that's your background, right? Reformed Presbyterian?
Yeah, I church hopped here and there and was in a couple different denominations, but I ended as a Reformed Presbyterian.
That's part of my background as well. When I went to college in a little tiny town in Kansas at a Presbyterian college, my roommates were RP, born and bred, and they took me to their church, and for the first couple years of college, that was my church community, and it was like nothing I'd ever seen, and at that time in my life, the sort of rigidity of it was actually very appealing. I don't know if your experience was the same, or, I mean, you
yeah, it was.
When did you land in a Reformed Presbyterian setting?
Towards the end of my Christian experience, for the last couple years as a Christian, I was Reformed. I would attend certain churches here and there. There weren't a lot of Reformed churches near where I was, but you know, I was super into the London Baptist Confession of Faith, the Westminster Confession. I noticed that you went to Princeton, so
right.
you obviously know the kind of history there between Princeton and Westminster Seminary and that kind of
right.
divide that occurred.
The whole fundamentalist modernist split with Machen and that whole chapter.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, Greg Bonson and Cornelius Van Til and all these folks. That was what I was into. I was very creedal, very doctrinally sound. I was fine with hymns written by Martin Luther and such, but
and sung without any musical accompaniment.
No, they didn't. It was all just singing. Yeah, that was.
My roommate was the guy with the pitch pipe who led the singing in the congregation.
Oh, okay, all right, yeah, I know that type of. I know that person.
Psalms too. I mean, they're not even hymns in the Reformed Presbyterian tradition. It's exclusive psalmody. At least the church I was at.
That happens a lot. I don't know the percentage of psalmody versus. Singing hymns, but the ones that I went to, the PCA churches I went to, did hymns. So there was PCA and OPC. I never got into OPC.
Yeah, that's the Orthodox Presbyterian Church.
Yes, I was thoroughly PCA.
There are lots of branches on the Presbyterian tree. So I mean that is a big turn from doctrinal Presbyterian to atheist, and I mean, clearly there's a story to tell behind that, and I want to get to that in a second. But I have to make a confession at first, and I hope that part of this conversation can be you helping me, because I'll say for the audience that you are going to be the guest in my congregation on Sunday, where I'm the associate pastor at Claremont Presbyterian Church, and I'm going to interview you in worship. And I've never done this. And I sat down to make the order of worship yesterday, and I have to tell you, Kyle, every single piece of the order of worship felt like I was going to be offending you somehow, or felt like, oh, this is going to sound like I'm trying to convert him back to Christianity. Do you give advice to people for how to do this well, how to interview an atheist in a church setting well?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. I haven't really come up with a manual or a guide or any of that. So what I've done has been sort of a bare bones approach, where I was friends with with tons of pastors, right? Lots of people in ministry. And then when I became an atheist, I still had all these friends in the ministry, but then I had other atheist friends. So I would try to bridge those two eras of my life, friendship-wise, and I would do some kind of a vetting process, not sophisticated in any way, but trying to find atheists that are willing to be interviewed that aren't there to try to deconvert, or, you know, the kind of less firebrand atheists and then the less firebrand pastors. So trying to find commonalities between them. So because the whole point of this is that it's meant to be a humanizing project as opposed to a debate where you sling mud and you throw trash and you just make your opponent kind of belittle your opponent. And that's exactly what I didn't want, because I'm not entirely convinced of the productivity of those kinds of endeavors.
I've never seen one that I thought was productive.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that the merit that I see in them is educational towards viewers, and it can be entertainment too, simply put. But I don't know how healthy it is in terms of actually building bridges, actually, finding productive ways or constructive ways of working together. It doesn't seem to really do that. So no. I wanted to have the interview, interview process, the process of interviewing somebody is a lot more humanizing than a debate. You see the flesh and blood and bones of another person, and that kind of helps counteract stereotypes. It helps to do all kinds of necessary work. And so with the vetting process, it was just basically me going, I think this atheist would fit well with this pastor, and they're in the same location, obviously, and they're both willing to do it. And then I would set them up and encourage them to go and meet, have lunch, or have coffee or beers, and then construct it themselves. So I didn't want to have a kind of cookie cutter approach where here's this format they all need to follow. We've had almost 30 of these in a couple years. We haven't had 1,000. If there was 1,000, maybe I'd have to come up with some sort of a guide. But no, I don't really have a guide. I like it to happen organically, and one of the best parts of this is the stories I hear after of the atheists and pastors like being friends after. They still stay in contact, some of them. They've hung out multiple times before. There's some people I know up in Washington, some atheists I know, that some of them even regularly attend the church just because of that relationship built, and that's really cool to hear.
That is really cool to hear. Well, I mean, we should totally hang out.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Well, so here's a concrete thing that I'm dealing with for Sunday. I want the interview to be connected to the rest of the service. I don't want it to be this separate thing that just like gets plopped down in the middle of a liturgy. I want it to flow with the rest of what we're doing. And we're following the lectionary for a season, mm-hmm. and it's in the Gospel of John, and it's, some of Jesus' discourses about, I am this, I am that, I'm the good shepherd. And so on Sunday, the text is about I'm the vine and you're the branches, abide in me, right? And
John 15.
Yeah, John 15. And I want our conversation to be connected to that text, but I'm not sure how to do that. So that's I guess I'm just trying to be honest with you and say here that's something I'm going to try to do, but I am very I'm very anxious to not do it in a way that makes it sound like, for example, oh, you're not abiding in Jesus anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tricky. So and this is becoming more apparent, more obvious to me that when you have a structured Sunday where, and this especially happens in more higher church settings generally, right? Like Episcopalian or Anglican or Presbyterian. I don't want to make too many jokes about the frozen chosen, but
joke away.
No, but that's another dynamic that's tricky, right? The layout, the format, the setup. And what I've found with some of the more emergent or kind of home churchy type groups that have taken this up is that they have way less of a problem, you know, interviewing an atheist. It's like, okay, here, come here, and then we'll just kind of reform this out. With a more structured service, that's tricky. And
it's got to be shorter. It's not, I mean, I've seen some of the videos of you online where these are 45 minutes to an hour. I mean, what we're going to do is the sermon space in the worship service. That's got to be no more than 20 minutes or, you know, people start checking out. They got to get to lunch.
Yeah, I'm just sad you didn't start with Psalm 14:1.
Which, go ahead and quote that for the audience.
The fool has said in his heart, there is no God.
Yeah, I made sure we didn't use that. Psalm 42 was an option in the lectionary, the my God, why have you forsaken me? But we're not going to go with that either. But that, as I considered that kind of scriptural connection, one of the things I've noticed in the interviews you've done, and I should say the interview you've done, I've seen one where you did this online, and
yes.
One of the things that came up is there is no, I mean, you're not, there is no cry of dereliction from you. There is not, like, your atheism is not based on a traumatic experience. It's not a rejection of the church as a community. And it seems like people kind of want an account of how you could have moved from where you were as a Christian to where you were as an atheist. And when it doesn't involve anger and bitterness, they're a little confused.
Yeah, that's been a process in my personal life, because I feel like when I first deconverted that I had had some traumatic, you could call them traumatic experiences, in the sense that there were certain people in my life that treated me horribly and the kind of rigidity of the church wasn't something that I particularly jived with or felt handled people like me properly or with compassion. And but over those years, you know, I've been an atheist now, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, and over those years I don't want to say calmed down, but a little bit, right? Like my reactionary firebrand atheism, which I still have sort of lying dormant in me, has been quenched a little bit and satiated, and I don't have that same what some might call militant approach. I'm more of a humanist, and I see good that religious people are doing and religious communities are doing all over the world, better things than I do, and it's hard for me to simply be accepting of that basic caricature that we get of the naive religious dogmatist, right? There's so many more layers to it. I was looking at your website, and I actually wanted to ask you a couple questions about your church, especially given that the PCUSA recently came out in favor of same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
And that was a long and arduous process for that denomination. I remember the Presbyterian Church here down in northern San Diego and Fallbrook actually broke away from the PCUSA over that issue. And that's 5 years ago. So I guess what I'm wondering is that where does your church find itself on the spectrum, whether it's a conservative liberal spectrum or I guess I'm just trying to locate
the congregation I serve is definitely a progressive congregation, one that is very bought into the PCUSA as a denomination, and that overwhelmingly supports the changes in ordination standards that have allowed gay men and women to be ordained, and now changes in the definition of marriage. And so, you know, when I put this event with you on our church's Facebook page, that has generated more interest from people than most of the things we put on there and invite people to come participate in the church. I think like an opportunity to talk to an atheist is more attractive to some of the people in our congregation than a Bible study. That's one kind of indicator. So it's definitely on the progressive side of the spectrum. I mean, there's all of the necessary caveats about, you know, it's diverse and all of that. You will be welcomed, and people are really eager to hear a real conversation. And so during the Sunday school hour at the beginning, before the worship service, that's when I'm really going to use that, I hope, as an opportunity for you to tee up whatever you want to for people about this project and about your own journey. But to answer the question, you will find fewer churches more quote unquote progressive than ours, right? And the worship service is traditional liturgy. It's a vibrant traditional worship service.
Gotcha.
You handle that?
Gotcha. Yeah, I can handle that. Do you know a pastor named John Shuck?
I know of John Shuck. I don't know him personally. I know that he is an atheist. A friend of mine and I published a magazine. We published four issues of a quarterly magazine a couple of years ago, and one of the submissions that we printed was an essay by John Shuck. It was based on the psalm you just quoted, "A fool says in his heart," and he was basically saying in the essay, "Well, that's me."
Okay, yeah, because he interviewed me on his radio program about this about interviewing atheists at Church Day when it first came out, and we had this great conversation. He's a very interesting person, particularly as a PCUSA pastor, one who has been fighting for a long time in the denomination for, you know, the ordination of women, same-sex marriage, all of this stuff, okay. And he just came to mind because I was thinking about him, and he's a unique blend of maybe someone like me and someone like you.
Yeah, well,
and he's a interesting interlocutor.
Yeah, and I should reach out to him. You mentioned some of the churches that have broken away from the denomination, and a lot of times online, especially in the conversation with them, John Shuck is like exhibit A to them of what's wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Here is a person who is ordained and considered in good standing, and yet makes professions of being. I mean, I've never heard him say I am an atheist, but I mean that is the gist of where he's at.
Yeah, he'll say that he doesn't believe in a personal transcendent deity. I think during our interview he mentioned something like that, and when I shared it on social media, all of my friends were like, "Oh my God, that the pastor just said he didn't believe in the traditional God." And there's another pastor who a church where I'll be speaking at the end of May, a West Hill United Church in Toronto, Canada, Greta Vosper. She is this atheist pastor of the United Church of, I think it's United Church of Canada, up there, and she's like John, pitted in this interesting position where she is in good standing with the denomination, but there's lots of people in the denomination that are going, wait a second, do we need to crack down on atheists being ministers, or if a minister comes out as an atheist, do they, you know, can they retain a position and things? So I think it's an interesting conversation.
So the idea of an atheist pastor, for me, as a pastor, is kind of hard to get my head around. Is it hard for you to get your head around as an atheist?
Sometimes, yes. I have mixed emotions. Because like, I feel like there's this place where there needs to be a freedom for both, right? Like there needs to be places where this has been going on for a long time, like in Unitarian Universalist churches. There, you know, with humanists and atheist ministers, it's not anything really new in UU circles. It's becoming relatively new in some of these more mainline churches to have to deal with this issue. There are these times where I think like a community, if they want a leader or some minister to be theistic, there needs to be that place where there's a freedom of religion where churches can go, well, wait, this is not something we agree with. Let us have that freedom to stick with our tribe or have somebody there that represents our ideals better. And yeah. On the flip side, there I feel like there is a freedom that needs to exist where there can be atheist churches. Now, what my personal policy is, what I think churches should have on the books regarding this, I have no idea. You would, you know, I really can't answer that.
Are pastors reaching out to you?
They have, yeah. Regarding the project.
Well, regarding the project, and I'm wondering, you know, even personally, are you hearing from people, whether they're pastors or just people of faith, who are learning about, you know, your project and reaching out to you and sort of sharing maybe their own struggles?
Yes, yeah, there have. I've received quite a few emails and Facebook messages and everything from people all across the board, from somebody saying, hey, I used to be this rigid conservative Baptist, and now I'm considering, you know, being an agnostic. What do you think about this? Or, you know, pastors going, hey, I really like the idea. You know, is there someone around that you can find? Or I've also received the messages from my more conservative brethren going, are you trying to infiltrate the church? Like, is this a spy operation? And it's really not, you know. And this is the funny thing is that sometimes you get these people who misinterpret your intentions because they have a different ideology. And I've heard the messages of infiltrating and ruining God's church and desecrating the sacred community and stuff like that. But generally speaking, the comments have been positive.
Yeah, I'm wondering what the typical response is to you after a worship service or after an interview when people in the church come up and greet you afterwards. Are you getting, is it mostly positive from people in a face-to-face environment, or do you get some of that, like, you know, pushback in those settings?
It's generally been a very positive response. Now, there have been times, of course, like even in my video, where you get asked these questions by congregants that are framed in a way that is not hospitable to an atheistic worldview. So,
give an example of one of those.
Okay. Well. Okay. So I want to write a book about this. I really do. Like what questions atheists get answered or get asked by religious persons or Christian persons, and there's always the same ones. It becomes kind of like a broken record sometimes, but I think that they're valid questions. I don't think they're always meant to be insulting. But when you ask an atheist where they get morality from, I think there's a philosophical side of the question where we theologians and philosophers have been debating that question since, you know, Plato and pre-Socratics or whatever. And that's a valid question, like where you know, from whence comes morality. But when sometimes it's asked to me, it's like, well, how can you be a decent person without my God? And you're like, well, wait a second. Like, are you implying that without your God, I'm not a decent person? Or it even says something about them. Or, like, are you saying that without your belief in God, you would be a crappy person? Like, those questions. And then another one is always, where's the world come from, right? Or the ultimate question. That where's the cosmos originate, and biogenesis and all of this stuff? Do you believe in the spontaneous combustion of the universe and then this ooze and slime that created us? You know what I mean? Like those sort of questions. There's another one. It's always about meaning. So like, where, how do you find meaning in an atheistic world or world devoid of God? So the moral question, the origin of the cosmos, and where do you get meaning from? Those are always asked. Always. I try to take it with a grain of salt, to use a somewhat overplayed metaphor, but I try to take it and go, okay, I see your intention here, I see what you're getting, and you're not trying to be nasty to me, but you're genuinely curious about where I derive, where I get ethics, or where I get morality, or where I think the world came from, or get meaning. So I try to take it lightly, but those are questions that are always asked.
All right, I will make sure not to ask those on Sunday.
Oh, no, please do. I want to make sure that I don't limit anything that you want to ask me. Anything you want to ask me. I don't find, given talking to you now and our Facebook interaction, you seem like a very stand-up, cordial person, so you could ask me anything. I won't get offended.
I try to be, but the truth is I'm less interested in those questions than I am in other ones. I mean, for this podcast purpose, I'm interested in more of the, you know, the process of starting a new project, right? And where, what you're learning and what made you decide to do that. But even in the context of a worship service, maybe because this is not my first time around conversations like this, I'm less interested in those questions and more interested in what makes you want to do something like this. I mean, there aren't a lot of atheists that I know of who are eager to be in churches, talking to church people.
Yeah. So we get called, my particular brand, my subset or subgroup of in the atheist or in the non-believing community, we get called, since this guy who I've met, an awesome guy, his name's Chris Stedman. He's out of the Harvard humanist group out there, and he wrote a book called Faithiest. And it's about how him as an atheist finds this kind of common ground with religious persons. So we get called faithiests, we get called soft atheists, we get called all kinds of stuff, you know, an ashamed agnostic or whatever, right? Like we're on the lighter side of things, to use that image, insofar as we are not out to create some militantly atheistic universe. We generally accept that religion or organized religion or different spiritual views will always be around. We don't have this really high view of secularism where it's like this utopia where we'll achieve this secular. Yeah, there's certain types of atheists that are like me. Now, I will say we're very few. They're generally speaking, there's a culture and an ethos to the atheist movement, and it's generally not hospitable to any organized religion. And because of this, someone like me and others who want to work with religious people, who want to say, hey, let's humanize both parties. Let's try not to caricature and stigmatize and other those who are different from us. And those with that bridge building mentality receive some social cost or slack from the other atheists, saying basically that we're either soft or we're wishy-washy or we're too liberal or we're forgetting all the horrendous evils that religion does and commits in the world. You know, I get more slack from my atheist comrades than I do from people like you, because there's actually more in common between you and me than between me and some of the more militant atheists that I'm friends with, because they think I'm either condoning it or buying into it or giving it space or validity, right?
Yeah.
And I just simply respond by saying this: so what? Like, the religious people are not just religious; they're people. They have sentiments, emotions, feelings, experiences of meaning. There's reasons to connect and do constructive things with them, even if you disagree with them. And I think part of the problem is always wanting people to be like ourselves. Hmm. Like, sometimes we need to accept that people will be different from us and then try to find unique ways to better the world with them. And that, I think, yeah, may be a little optimistic or utopic, but hey, it's an ideal worth striving for as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, you're listening to the Yo Rocco podcast, my conversation each week with people who are involved in really interesting projects that I want to talk to them about. And this week we're talking to Kyle Jones of the Interview an Atheist at Church project. I was really interested to hear from Kyle what motivates this project for him. What is it that he's really trying to do? Because he's clearly got a lot of sympathy for people of faith and for faith communities. He's a product of churches and is not interested in tearing that whole infrastructure down. So I wanted to ask him what he really is trying to do, and when was it that he knew that this was something that he had to take on? What was the motivation for him to really initiate and now to keep this project going in its third year? So we get into that stuff a little bit in the second half of the conversation. I hope that you enjoy it. Thanks again for listening to the Yo Rocco podcast.
I appreciate that you use the word ideal, because you clearly have one. I mean, you've talked about this project as a humanizing project. You just said that working with people of faith is a way to make the world better. How do you sum up for people the ideal that's motivating your collaboration with faith communities as an atheist?
Well, as an atheist, I would resort to my humanist tendencies to explain this ideal. Right? So the ideal, humanistically speaking, is just to find constructive ways to create a more bright and colorful future. And yes, that sounds like Tony Robbins, and I get that it can be simplistic, but at least trying to find those unique connections, those difficult connections, and trying to make something beautiful out of them. And I think that the ideal is it's an impulse to create connections between differing groups. I think that this tribalism that we have, this in and out group mentality, that is, you're part of my pact, my tribe, my family, my genetic pool, and then there are those that aren't. And I think I see this a lot right now, given what's going on in Baltimore with these white people going, oh, how could you ever, I mean, look at, they're just a bunch of thugs or whatever. It's this psychological splitting is the term. That is us versus them. And I think that's just, there is a sense in which that's true, that we can stay true to our identities. I mean, I'm an atheist. I do not shy away. I don't believe in gods, spirits, afterlives, miracles, any of that, right? But so the atheist title is meaningful in terms of my identity, but I'm more than that. I'm more than my title, and I feel like we have this hive mind where we want to defend our tribe above others and circle our wagons and fight off those other people out there, them.
Yeah, and there are atheists like that, is what you're saying too. And
yes, it's a human thing. That's just a human thing. Yeah. And I think it's good to, especially in our day and age with so much conflict and religious or otherwise, that I don't want to just focus on advancing my tribe. Like, I want to try to create peace treaties with other tribes, you know.
What strikes me is atheist is a negative term in that, I mean, grammatically speaking, it's like atheist, right? It's a statement of negation. But you're also describing yourself as a humanist, which is a positive thing to say about yourself. Do you, I mean, what do you use more frequently or I mean, yeah, like when you introduce yourself, do you say I'm an atheist or do you say I'm a humanist first?
Yeah, that's a good question, and there's an infinite amount of debates about this in the non-believing community. Well, are you a humanist, a secular humanist, a naturalist, an atheist, an agnostic, what type of atheist, all of these questions about labels and terms. I am quicker personally to say I'm an atheist. And part of the interview an atheist at Church Day thing, the reason I have it atheist as opposed to humanist, is that there is this caricature, there is this stereotype, there's this modern misconception about somebody who says they're an atheist. And that is, they're not trusted in America. They're least trusted subgroup, you know, below Muslims and homosexuals. And I wanted to counteract that stereotype of all those people out there who are good parents, good citizens, decent people, loving, decent people who don't believe in God, who identify as an atheist, and going, wait a second, let's look at the whole package. Let's not take what Fox News or whoever says about atheists at face value. So that's why that's why the project is named that way, and that's why I usually start off by saying I'm an atheist first. But I do consider myself a humanist, a secular humanist, and I am fine with that title as well. I don't get hung up too much on the titles. I think that they're meaningful and important. I'm not one to say, oh, let's stop using labels. It's like, no, labels are ways that we identify and locate ourselves in the world around us. They're a way that we orient ourselves, and that's fine. I just don't want to place entirely too much stock in my label.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, and it almost sounds like your use of the term atheist is a way to identify with a group that is badly thought of.
Yes.
It almost sounds like a solidarity move.
It is. It very much is. But at the same time, I genuinely don't believe in a God.
Well, let's get to the substance of that just in the time that we have left.
Sure.
You know, the pivot, I mean, it's more than a pivot from rigid doctrinal Reform Presbyterian or Presbyterian Church of America member to atheist. I mean, what is the elevator speech you give people about how that occurred?
Well, that is usually asked of me, and it's multifarious, multifaceted. It's discursive. It's a long, arduous process. I can't really point to one event or experience that said, okay, there, that happened, and it's punctiliar, and I moved on from it as an atheist. It was a slow process of a couple years of deconversion. Okay. And there's a couple things I can point to. One is starting to deconstruct the biblical text, because, as you know, Reformed Presbyterians and other Reformed people, we are sola scriptura, right? All the way, through and through. You know, the biblical text, the Word of God, is paramount. And so once I started doing the Greek and Hebrew in seminary, and once I started in grad school, going through issues of hermeneutics and all kinds of different things, right? Like all of the issues that are contained within this corpus started throwing wrenches into my belief systems, right? So like how I make sense of the Trinity, how I make sense of the two natures of Christ, how I make sense of different creation accounts in Genesis, how I interpret, whether I interpret literally or metaphorically things like the flood, creation, right? All of these things. So that once I started critically examining the biblical text with a different lens, with a kind of historical skeptical lens, then that started dismantling some of my views about the Bible and God. And that then related to my own personal faith and experience of spirituality.
And there are a lot of liberal Christians who have gone through that same process and have wound up as liberal Christians who, you know, going back to Schleiermacher, right, will take interior subjective experience of faith and base their faith on those kinds of claims rather than on objective biblical data, for example. Did you pass through that or?
Yeah, that's another common one I get. I'm mainly friends with liberal Christians, and they retain a certain view even after deconstructing the text and their faith and all this stuff and theology and propositions, blah blah blah. They still keep some orientation towards like the divine or the sacred or to God, or they retain some notion of faith, some lively presence of sacredness in their life, right? And one of the reasons why I didn't go that route, that was not the way the chips folded, is that I don't sympathize with that. There's a sense in, I'm a materialist, like not in the Orange County sense of the term. I don't believe in anything spiritual. I don't believe in anything supernatural. And so it's hard to, when you're a kind of fairly strict materialist, it's hard to be a liberal Christian. You can find ways in which things like theology is an imaginative construction, theopoetics, right, all of these different ways that you can retain those things. It didn't appeal to me personally, either logically or emotionally. It didn't appeal to me. I felt like I needed to go wherever my reason and my conscience would take me, and where they took me was a kind of materialistic, physicalist view of the cosmos. And so that, you know, if we want to talk about God like religious naturalists do, like Ursula Goodenough or Gordon Kaufman or whatever, that God is this symbol, this representation of our infinite obligation to the other, then that, I don't really have that many problems with that, right? Like, yeah. At face value, I don't really disagree with a lot of what, like, John Shelby Spong or Marcus Borg say, but it's just not for me.
Okay. What I find interesting and a little bit ironic about your description of, you know, liberal Christians as maintaining some sense of the spiritual or the divine, and then that just wasn't for you, is that I think a lot of people express frustration with liberal strains of Christianity because they kind of characterize it as de facto atheist. There is not much of an expression of a belief in the spiritual among you know, the clergy or the members or anything, I don't know what to do with that. I mean, I've heard that claim. I didn't grow up in a Presbyterian church. My background is in charismatic evangelical stuff, man. That's what I was in as a kid, and I've come miles from that. And I don't retain a belief in the spiritual like what I was raised with. And yet there's something to me about Jesus as a person and Jesus' mission and Jesus' project that has retained some draw and some claim on my life, but I rarely describe it in spiritual terms. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In fact, our congregation, somebody in my congregation said this in a group at the church a couple of weeks ago about this is just not a spiritual place, and they said it was some frustration.
Yeah, that I get what you mean. In your location, your social location, yeah, liberal, and I will, as far as solidarity is concerned, you mentioned solidarity. I have solidarity with liberal religious persons more than a lot of my atheist comrades, because it's not fair in my mind for those doctrinally sound, quote-unquote, conservative, fundamentalist, rigid, bibliolatrist, whatever, people, it's not right for them to control the narrative of what counts as Christian, right? Or what counts as, or what, like, we are the authoritarian, monolithic interpreters of what Jesus was, or who Jesus was, or who, what the church should be, or how you should interpret the text, or all, like, that's, they can't control the terms of the argument.
Right.
And so in that sense, I absolutely agree with you, and I think that it shouldn't be that we assume, and us atheists are guilty of this, we assume that real Christianity is the conservative Christianity. Right? So In some sense, we get guilty of falling prey to the idea that these Pat Robertsons and Jerry Falwells are what real Christianity is, in the same way that we fall prey to thinking that ISIS or Al-Qaeda is the real, is a real, that's real Islam, right? Yeah. That's not, and I don't like that idea, because what that does is that gives power to those controlling the discussion. And so I think liberal religion, it forms a great critique against that. Like, look, we don't have to go by your terms here. I don't understand why we don't have to play the game by those stupid rules that you came up with. We have our own rules and our own ways of understanding this stuff. And so in that sense, I think liberal religion is great.
It has a lot in common with the humanism that you describe.
It does, yeah, absolutely. It certainly does. Most of the signers of like the humanist manifestos, you know, a lot of them were liberal religious persons.
Yeah, and that, you know, you get a lot of flack from that from more conservative circles. My roommate, my first year out of college, was a Reformed Presbyterian guy, and he was more scandalized by what he called secular humanism than he was by anything else.
Yeah, it's that lurking monster that's gonna. It's like creeping Sharia.
Right.
It's that, you know, it's that hidden taboo monster that's out to get people, and it's really not. It's very much not. These are most of the humanists that I know are just generally decent people trying to make their lives and the world better. And that
people you'd want to have a drink with.
Exactly. It's someone you'd want to you know, hang out with and try to find ways of working with. And I applaud you for reaching out. Who I spoke to, I think the senior, what's her name, Karen?
Yeah, Karen. And I mean, I'll take the applause. But I mean, you came to us first. I mean, last summer we were doing this sort of People's Choice series thing, and I don't know how you and Karen got connected, but my understanding was that you approached us, and we were scheduled to do this last summer, but you had a car accident, right, on the day we were going to do it?
I did. I remember. That's weird now that you said that. Yeah, I do remember. That was a big disappointment, because I was super excited, and you know, because I lived in Claremont for a while, and I know a lot of people in Claremont, and I thought, you know, hey, this would be great to reach out to people locally. And then, yeah, I got a nasty car crash.
Which, when that was announced in church, there were people who kind of shook their heads and said, "You see? No, I'm only kidding."
Yeah, either...
That didn't happen.
Either it was Schadenfreude, like this, okay, you know, he probably deserved it. Or, you know, it could be flipped the other way, like they were sympathetic. But no, I'm just being facetious.
So the one concrete thing I really wanted to ask you, just from a standpoint of somebody who has created a project, who's created a thing that's important to them and put it out in the world and invited people to participate, is I mean, when did you know, I have to do this? You know, a lot of people have ideas for things like this, or have ideas for big projects that should exist but don't, nothing ever pushes them to actually put themselves on the line to do it. What was there a thing that happened, or was there a moment that you just decided, yep, interview an atheist in church has to be a thing, and I have to make it a thing?
Well, there wasn't really one thing, one event, much like my deconversion, there wasn't really one thing I can point to. There were several, but I think part of it was becoming an atheist and deconverting and finding this new identity and this different community. And then seeing the damaging disparity between who I was formerly and who I am now. That is, the ad hominems, the character assassinations, the uncritical caricaturizing. This, you know of what I speak. This culture war that is supposed to be being fought between atheists and Christians, or atheists and religious people. And I just got so frustrated with it. And I think part of it was because I'm formerly Christian, I can sympathize. Like, I don't, I don't just look back on my old self and go, oh, so stupid and naive. And no, I believed it. I was genuine. I was serious. You know, this and my friends, too. Like, this is part of what meant a lot to us. It was our identity. And I think a lot of people that are, like, natural atheists or people that were just kind of raised secular or apathetic or humanist or whatever don't have that sympathy for other religious persons because they haven't experienced it themselves. And I found myself pitted in an interesting place where I wanted to express my new atheist identity and all of its grandeur, but sympathized with religious persons. And so how was I to bridge these? And I just reached a point where I said, you know, enough is enough. Let's just see what it's like to have an atheist interviewed. Forget all these debates, forget the mud slinging, and just see what it's like to have a minister and an atheist just talk, you know, have a decreased decreased tension in a discussion between a Christian and an atheist. And I was just, there was a point where I was just compelled. I had to do it. And I didn't see it happening. I've heard of atheists going to churches. I've heard of atheists even having debates and discussions and interfaith panels with pastors. But I've never heard of an atheist being interviewed in a church or a project specifically aimed towards that. And when you find something novel, as you know, there's nothing new under the sun. When you discover something novel, you want to see it. And so I wanted to see it.
So you did it first?
No, I think one of the first ones was this guy named Neil Carter. He writes a blog called Godless in Dixie, and he's an awesome guy. In Mississippi, one of the most religious states in our union, he got interviewed by a pastor that I set him up with in Mississippi, and that's our most popular interview. It has, you know, I don't know, 100,000, maybe more views, and he's an awesome guy, and it was just one of those things where I knew him, and I was in contact with the pastor there, and they, you know, just kind of set them up. So I wasn't the first to do it. I arranged it, you know, I wrote about it, I created social media for it, I put the word out, it got shared, and all this stuff. But I originally coordinated it for probably a year before I did my own.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then it was friends with a pastor that I went to school with, and he asked me, and I said, yeah, of course, you know, I'm not just I'm not just the president, I'm also a member, too, the Hair Club for Men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like an atheist Christian matchmaker.
That's what I'm aiming for, really. That's what's so heartening about hearing that some of these people become friends after. It's like it's more than just putting an atheist together with a Christian. Now, that's the big part of it, is that whole thing. And as you know, I emphasize recording it a lot because I want people to see with their eyes. I want them to see and hear what that's like as opposed to just hearing about or, you know, reading it. Right. And to actually witness it. And it's been nothing but encouraging. I mean, there's been a few voices against it, but generally speaking, it's been nothing but a very affirming and uplifting project, and I'm honored to be a part of it.
So none of these interviews have gone badly?
Not that I know of. There are some that haven't been recorded, right? So there are some that I know of where I've set people up, and they've had it, and who knows what happened, but I doubt it. I highly doubt it. Yeah. I highly doubt that it went bad.
That aspect of the project is one that I'm only just now appreciating as I'm listening to you describe it, in that you are actually making most of these connections between the atheists being interviewed and the pastors. You know a lot of people in both camps, and you are connecting them in ways that are beneficial to both.
Yeah, I would really like to build it up into more of a kind of like a movement with a bunch of different people and, you know, I don't know, nonprofit or get some sort of connection or whatever. But, you know, life is busy and difficult, and we all have to feed and clothe ourselves. So it's something I try to spend as much time on as I can. Wish I could spend more, but yeah, it's been me. I mean, I've been supported by all my great friends and family. They've all been very supportive, and the atheist community has generally been supportive, and the Christian community has generally been supportive. So if there's a way to make it happen, I'm gonna do my best to make it happen.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it's doing really well now. The thing that I always say about my podcast and who I'm interested in talking to, it's people who are working on really interesting projects. And for many of them, that project is not their job. It's something that they're doing on the side that they're not getting paid for, but they're driven to do it by a desire to see something in the world that doesn't exist and a realization that I have to create it if it's going to exist. And, you know, it's really intriguing for me to hear the story. I mean, your own personal story with this, but then, you know, the story of the thing. I mean, you described it as a movement. That's exciting to me. And I'm nervous about Sunday.
That's nice that the pastor is nervous, because
nervous. I'm totally nervous.
No, that makes me feel a little better. You know, not that I wish nerves upon both of us, but, you know, a curse be upon you if it's upon me.
Well, the thing that you said earlier that makes me feel much less nervous is that this is a humanizing project. And so if what we do on Sunday is something that allows people to experience a moment of humanity, we've done something very worthwhile. And I feel really confident in working with you on it. If it was just up to me, I'd be far more nervous.
Well, good. I'm glad, and I want to commend you for, you know, taking this up too. I really appreciate pastors willing to discuss this and host an atheist, and even, you know, have them on their podcast. I'm honored, definitely.
Yeah, totally. Well, thanks for being on the podcast. It's a Tuesday night around dinner time. You got a lot of other things to be doing, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. And I really look forward to seeing you on Sunday morning.
Oh, me too. Thank you so much, Rocky.
All right. Take care, Kyle.
Okay, you too.